Welcome to the Social Podcast, where no discussion or debate is off limits.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to this edition of the Social Podcast. I'm Melissa Grello, alongside the fabulous Jess Allen, Cynthia Lois, and reporter Aaliyah Jasmine. And as an extra special treat, joining us, songwriter, an all-around amazing guy, Bare Naked Ladies frontman, the one and only Ed Robertson is
Yay!
Here!
Speech!
Well, Ed, you're about to go on tour, so we kind of are very excited to get your take on this first topic, because ABBA is back in avatar form. Digital versions of the Swedish pop icons will be performing a series of immersive concerts in London, England this month. And they've managed to turn back time because it looks like the band members will appear as their 1970s selves. So what do you think about what has been branded as sort of the Avatar return?
That looked like, I don't know if that was Bjorn or Benny, but he looked like Travis Tritt.
Oh my gosh.
The digital version of him. I don't fully understand what's happening on this tour. I think they're actually playing live, but what we're seeing are their avatars, so we're not disturbed by their octogenarian selves. But I'm just going to say it'll be a great time. Like,
yeah.
if you're going for a dance party and like 25 number one hits,
mm-hmm.
You're going to have a good time.
But don't you want to see them? Like, I saw Cher a few years ago
Cher's
in Vegas.
Cher's a different story.
Well, I mean, the age range is around the same. And she, mm-hmm. what she did, she played in the background all of her, like, hits and Sonny and Cher. And so you saw her in the 70s and the 80s and the 90s. But then you saw Cher as Cher in real life. Don't you want that?
Cher is a miracle of modern science. Let's be clear about that. And the members of ABBA do not carry the same
stage presence, perhaps?
Well, visual appeal.
And there is this idea of, like, aging. If you're a performer that you were really dynamic on stage, like a Cher or a Britney Spears, and then your joints get old, like, your joints get old as you get old, and then maybe you can't do that. And so I get the appeal of doing this avatar thing, but it makes me wonder, like, is it fair to other professions? Like, could Steve Nash all of a sudden go, I want a Nashitar and I'll keep playing in the NBA for the next 3 years? Like, is it fair? Like, should
you not?
Well,
I don't know how that would work.
Exactly.
It's some questions. I mean, I've seen something similar, and I'll say it's half satisfying. So I don't know. If anybody's been to Las Vegas and seen the Cirque du Soleil Michael Jackson One show, it is the hologram. And we've been told that this avatar is different than a hologram.
Right.
But the idea is the same. Someone who's not there physically mm-hmm. is able to be there in another form. And so we had all the Michael Jackson hits combined with live dancers who were also dancing the actual choreo from the videos.
Right.
Like, it was really nostalgic. It was a ton of fun.
But they're also dead. Would you want to see Elvis? Maybe. But, like, otherwise, isn't it kind of mean to performers to have this ageism where, like, if you get old, we don't want to see you perform?
Well, but ABBA is choosing to be their 97 selves. See, this is the difference.
Yeah, they have the control.
They're alive and making these choices, where someone like a Tupac, who apparently there's a hologram of him going around.
At Coachella.
Who gets to say what age and what he looks like and what songs he
plays. What confused me about this is that it sort of suggests that they're so old and this will kind of be easier. But then you read about the process to make this. It only took 4.5 weeks of daily rehearsals all day without a break. 1,000 industrial light and magic visual creators, 200 cameramen, 40 crew people. And then you start thinking, like, that's a lot of people and a lot of work. Couldn't you have just done the concert?
Yeah.
But aren't they broken
that's,
up?
That sounds like a lot, but that's what I did to prepare for today.
I want to touch you.
I think ultimately the audience knows what they're in for.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the important part, mm-hmm. right? Like, people know they're going to see something digitally interesting mm-hmm. with the music of ABBA.
Do you think they should give them a snippet before they spend on the ticket? Like, if I want to see Bare Naked Ladies avatar, right? I would like to see a snippet online.
Can we just go with that for a second?
Because
anyone who's been in this business for a long time has gone through a variety of different looks.
Oh,
Ed,
God.
You have gone through
Oh, my God.
I feel like from baby face to quarantine face. I would love to see see this up on stage in Avatar
Which look
form.
Would you make in Avatar?
Isn't that just NSYNC, the whole band? Who was that?
But is there a look there? Cynthia brings up a great point. Is there a look there that you would choose as the Avatar for your show?
No. I wouldn't choose any of my looks over the years. They're all embarrassing.
You'd go with Cher.
I was doing my best. Yeah, I would go with Cher in a heartbeat.
Well, that's too much fun.
That's hilarious. Okay, well, soon. Let's move on to another celebrity making news. Victoria Beckham says that wanting to be really thin is old fashioned. The fashion designer told Grazia that women today want to look healthy and curvy. Victoria just launched a new shapewear line. So is this body positivity or just another type of unrealistic body ideal that, again, restricts women?
I don't know about you guys, but it was a little surprising to hear those words come out of Victoria Beckham's mouth because she is so small. But on the other hand, she is a business woman, a really remarkable businesswoman. And maybe this is a sign that she sees she's got to adapt if she is going to stay in the business and keep things going. And even me just saying that kind of depresses me because all she said is she wants to dress women who look healthy.
Do you think that along with the business line that she's just trying to edge in on Kim K Skims territory?
Maybe.
Like, if you look at it, Skims has made Kim Kardashian a billionaire. So the shapewear thing is in.
Yeah.
The body positivity movement we know is in.
In.
I hate to use that word, but it's in.
Yeah, you're accurate.
And so isn't it just Victoria kind of trying to cut a bit of Kim K's grass?
Kind of.
Yeah. I don't think it's just body positivity, because there's a bit of body ideals are shifting. Mm-hmm. Jennifer Holness, amazing Toronto filmmaker, made this incredible documentary, Subjects of Desire. And it sort of tracks how black beauty ideals have kind of been seeping into mainstream culture. We were talking before this about cultural appropriation, but those ideals of a big booty, a curvaceous body, like all of these huge hip hop stars, that's becoming a new body ideal. And people are like, huh, I want to look like that. You mean beautiful and healthy and curvaceous? Mm-hmm.
It's also been popular for a bit. And that's the other thing with Victoria Beckham saying this now. It's like, it's 2022. Like, thanks for joining the party, finally, Victoria Beckham. Like, fashion has been talking about this for years. And,
well,
I don't think it has. The last few years has really been. We've seen that shift. But the other thing is, in this article, is she doesn't really say, like, all body positivity. She very, I almost think she changes the unrealistic ideal because she talks very specifically about a thin waist and then big curvy booty, which, like, I'm sorry, but, like, I was blessed with a very Middle Eastern belly dancing body, and that small waist is not natural for me. Mm-hmm.
What she's saying is we need a new unrealistic body.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's why there's been this whole reaction to the body positivity movement that's called body neutrality. And the idea is kind of, I mean, I might be, this is me putting it into my own language, but it's like to stop thinking about your body at all in the ways of like, oh, it has to look this way or it has to look that way, or I have to feel good about it or I cannot feel good about it. It's just kind of the way almost that a kid just kind of maneuvers through life. Mm-hmm. They don't think about their bodies. Mm-hmm. We all started out that way. Our body was used to like go from point A to point B. We didn't think about the way it looked. We just moved it and enjoyed it and appreciated it in that way. And so I feel in a way it'll take a long time for all of us to get there. Mm-hmm. I feel for Victoria Beckham, who also grew up in an era where that there was a particular prescribed thing, whether she was in Spice Girls or in the fashion industry. And if she deviated from that herself, the press would have had a field day with it.
It's an excellent point.
I know it is.
I think I want to go back to your original point. It's that it's interesting that it's coming out of her mouth because she is really, really thin. Mm-hmm. And so it could be partially naturally so, but there's been enough interview clips that have emerged that don't really paint a great picture. I mean, everyone talks about that she loves fitness, but it also has some clips that really sound a little bit like disordered eating to me, to be very honest. And it's kind of like, you know, if I want health advice, do I want health advice from a doctor who smokes? You know, it's the idea that
I don't think she was giving health advice.
What I'm saying is it's rich coming from her. That's why I think this is business. This is all business. Mm-hmm. Because would she actually want to embrace that body type for herself?
And that is where it starts to get interesting to me. She's trying to sell a product.
She's been honest about all that. I think she has found a size in those interviews. She was on a podcast, Ruth Rogers from the River Cafe in London. And, you know, we ended up, I think, talking about a number of pull quotes from that. Just that she subsides on boiled vegetables or steamed vegetables, steamed fish, no sauce, no olive oil, no salt. A comfort food for her would be toast with maybe a little salt sprinkled on. And she's very honest about it. She's not advocating for everyone to adopt this diet, but she was saying, this is what works for me. This gives me the energy I need to run a successful business. And this, you know, I know.
There's something that feels icky about it.
But I have to say, as a listener, listening to that interview, I didn't come away with it of being like, oh, I want to do that too so that I can look like Victoria Beckham. My takeaway was like, oh, so that's how you look like Victoria Beckham. Not for me.
Yeah.
That's a great point. We're just getting the convo started, ladies and gentlemen, with Mr. Ed Robertson, but we're going to take a very quick break right now. On the other side, though, there is a couple who are suing their son for refusing to have kids. They just want grandkids already. We're going to go there right after this.
You're listening to The Social Podcast. We're just getting started. Stick around. You're listening to The Social Podcast on the iHeartRadio Canada Network. Download the show wherever you find your favorite podcasts. And make sure to catch The Social weekdays at 1 p.m. on CTV.
And welcome back to The Social Podcast. We've got Ed Robertson from the Bare Naked Ladies with us today, plus a crew of lovely ladies, Jess Allen, Cynthia Loist, Aaliyah Jasmine, and me, Melissa Grello. Okay, Ed, here we go. A couple in India making big headlines. They're trying to sue their only son because so far he has not given them grandchildren after being married already for 6 years. So according to CNN, the parents say they have raised him, they have paid for his education, and now they want a grandchild. They actually have said in the lawsuit they want a grandchild in the next year, or they're suing for $825,000 in damages. They're damaged. They're damaged.
Oh my gosh.
Obviously, a huge cultural component here. This is happening in India. But you have three adult children. Would you ever think, you know, clock's ticking, kids. Give me a grandchild or else.
Well, they're suing for damages. They have proved they are damaged. Yeah. I think, I have three adult kids, and I am so looking forward to being a grandfather.
Aww.
But I'm not going to put that pressure on my kids. That's about me. I want them to be secure in their life and ready to have a child and want to have a child. Mm-hmm. It can't be about the grandparent.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah,
that story just makes me cringe.
And you mentioned culture, but I think it's important to also note that, you know, India is not a monolith, right? There's lots of religions and cultures, but I think we can all, as a generalization, observe that it is much more of a patriarchal society than we are used to here in North America. And so what really irks me about this story is that these grandparents actually have a legal leg to stand on.
Right.
Right. And then when you think about that and you look at the lawsuit is about him and his son. How he feels, how his son feels, and what they are missing in this whole thing is the daughter's rights.
Like, what an excellent
what
point.
What if she doesn't want to have children?
What if she can't have children?
What if she can't have children? What if she wants to wait a few years and get a career? Like, she is missing from this entire story.
The most important part of the equation.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's a great point.
I think the most important part of the equation is the 875 grand.
Wow. Yeah.
I did bring up culture because I do. One thing in this, I don't agree with this whole lawsuit. This sounds absolutely ridiculous for all the reasons. Mm-hmm. But there is something to be said for respecting your elders. And I say that because I have, my father's Portuguese, my mother is Filipino. And in the Filipino culture, again, not everybody, but certainly for my mother, religion is a really important component of that. And we've been having discussions in our house about some sacraments in the Catholic Church that children go through. And one of them is First Communion. And my daughter has actually missed it because we pulled her out of the Catholic system for our own very personal reasons. We're having a big dilemma with our relationship with the church. We've pulled her out. But in pulling her out, she's now out of the loop of what would be the preparation for First Communion. We have to now take it upon ourselves to do that on our own. And Ryan and I said, well, we just won't do it. Well, my mother has something else to say about that. And I can't simply discount it as, mom, it's our child. We have decided this is not what we want to do. And some people would say that maybe I do have a right to say that. But I'm not going to also let my 82-year-old mother, for whom faith is a very central component of her life, just dismiss that.
Sure,
and I do want to respect her wishes. So we're probably going to do it, not because I want to, but because I want to be selfless and give something back to her.
Sure. Mm-hmm. But sometimes respecting your elders means loving them enough to explain your own life to them. Mm-hmm. And to maybe they're a little out of touch with the way the world has shifted around them, the way you've grown as a person, the way you interpret your faith. And sometimes that respect can take the form of a new understanding.
Mm-hmm. You want to join me for dinner with my parents?
I would love to.
Are you free?
I would love to.
That might be a really good thing. I mean, I don't know. I like taking it away from this story in particular. I like you. Like, I've done the math. I started late. We have one son. And I think if he doesn't partner up and start having children at a fairly young age, I'm probably not going to be a grandparent ever. And it does make me sad. I have thought about that. But what is the answer to that?
Like, yeah.
For litigation.
Yeah.
Seems to be the answer.
It seems to be.
My mother-in-law sent me this link to our family group text.
This story?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Sent it to us.
Was that like a
hinted as a joke? I mean, I'm 47. I know I look 27, but you know it's not really an option.
Was it a joke? Was it a joke?
Oh, it has to be a joke.
Oh,
she knows. Yeah.
Okay.
She knows that's not in the cards. It's not a choice.
But she has contacted a lawyer.
But she has.
It's a joke.
We're taking back the barbecue we gifted you.
Okay, I'm going to move things along to concert season because I feel like we're entering into it. And Coldplay wants their fans to help power their shows. They're installing kinetic dance floors and also stationary bikes to give concert goers the ability to generate electricity.
Oh my God, and get a hug from Chris Martin.
Well, there you go.
Sign me up. I want a bike.
Okay, but
I want a bike.
You are the only one who should ever be on a stage out of this group. Believe that. So please tell me, how do you feel about this?
Well, it's about the conversation. It's about the conversation of how we can participate in new forms of energy, right? Mm. Like, I think a kinetic dance floor and exercise bikes in the arena, like, that's not going to power one arm of their lighting truss, right? Like, that's a pretty impressive.
Even if they were vigorously doing it?
Oh, no. Yeah. That's a lot of power suck, any Coldplay show. But I think it's about the conversation, and I think that's cool. We all need to start making changes and making shifts towards renewables.
That's what I think it is too. I love that idea that they're using this as an excuse to bring attention to the climate crisis. And I also wonder if we could do it in our own homes. Like, if you want to watch The Bachelor on Monday night, you have to get on the bike for to get the electricity.
They already have
going.
That.
They do?
There are some parents that like to use that for their kids. I've read about it.
Well,
it exists.
Yeah. It made me think of just the excitement. Yes, you might need thousands and thousands of dancers to be able to generate enough light to run that concert. But it's exciting to think about possibilities and future innovations. I was thinking about the kinetic energy created just from pedestrians on a very busy throughway. Imagine if that was, we could tap into that and then the streetlights.
Or they could bring in all the ABBA digital dancers.
Yeah.
And then it would just work. We wouldn't have to do anything.
Or just all ABBA. The things you're saying, but I gotta say, I put myself back into my concert going days. And like, if for example, I was at a Prince concert and once I went to like 8 concerts. The thing is, in the back of your mind, you're always, at least I was, hoping that maybe he's going to notice me and I'm going to be like so cool. And then one of his people is going to be like, come back and meet Prince and whatever. So I'm not going to be on a bike. There's nothing less sexy.
But look, did you see the video at the front?
Well, I guess he did come up.
Yeah.
You get
actually the best seats in the house. So what if you have to pedal?
But you're sweaty. And like, I've seen myself on a bike. It is not a pretty sight.
You know how else you get sweaty?
How else?
Making out with the rock star.
Wow.
All right,
wow.
I'm changing my tune.
I love the idea. You guys know I love me some exercise. But if you're dancing, that's the best kind of exercise when you're having fun, but it's not exercise. And you're doing it when you're dancing at a concert anyway.
Yeah. Again, I think it's about the conversation.
Yes.
They're getting the conversation going. They're having fun with it. I think it's great. And Coldplay are an amazing live act. So they're using their power to generate a conversation about power.
Get it?
Yeah. Come on.
You know what I love?
How does he do it?
Yes. I love that, but they're not the only ones. You know, I was reading about Harry Styles, Shawn Mendes, Billie Eilish. They're all doing different things to try to address climate change, like, for example, offering only vegetarian food at concession stands to decrease meat consumption, getting rid of the single-use plastics at their venues. I mean, there's a lot of ways to do it because guess what? Putting on a, you know this, putting on a concert and then thousands of fans getting to a concert, there's a massive carbon footprint that happens just by living life and enjoying a show. So if there's anything they can do to offset that, why not?
Well, Bare Naked Ladies are one of the founding bands in the organization called Reverb many, many years ago. When we were touring around these amphitheaters all around North America, there was no recycling.
Wow.
Like none. So we had fans volunteer to collect the recycling and take it to recycling depots. For that, we would give them backstage passes and VIP passes. And so it was us and Willie Nelson, Bonnie Raitt, a bunch of big acts, Guster, friends of ours. We started this 15 years ago or more.
That's incredible. Can we talk about touring for a second? Sorry to interrupt, but I want to make sure we don't clip anybody on time because you are hitting the road next month. Oh my God, you're back on tour next month.
I know, it's the greatest thing.
Tell us about it.
It's the Last Summer on Earth tour, which seemed like a funny name for a tour when we named it in 2012. Wasn't as funny in 2020 when we thought it might be the last summer on Earth. We're heading out with Toad the Wet Sprocket and Gin Blossoms.
Nice.
Like 35 dates. We finished the tour right here in Toronto, July 21st.
You got that right. Okay, tickets, barenakedladies.com. Like you said, you're here in Toronto on July 21st, for 35 dates in total. We love having you here, and we're glad to get you before you hit the road.
Yeah.
And rehearsals.
I love coming. I will come back as soon as you replace these chairs. These are the worst.
Pandemic requirements.
Yours are terrible.
Well, you were great. And thanks for being here.
Thank you.
We really, really appreciate it.
Still to come on the Social Podcast. When is it too early to allow your kids to play outside? Plus, the cast of Downton Abbey, A New Era. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Next week on The Social, Dr. Richard Weber's in the house. We sit down with the Grey's Anatomy star, actor James Pickens Jr. The Social, weekdays at 1 p.m. on CTV.
And welcome back to The Social Podcast on the iHeartRadio Canada Network. I'm Melissa Grello, and I've got my ladies here. That's Cynthia Loyce, Jess Allen, and special guest co-host Aaliyah Jasmine. Okay, so we're going to move on to the next story. So an Ottawa French Catholic high school has been making headlines after teachers and staff conducted a dress code blitz, but it seemed to be really focused on female students. Now, students told CTV News that they were called out of class to test the length of their shorts, and it left them feeling humiliated and degraded, hence the protests. Where do you draw the line when it comes to school dress codes?
I mean, that story just sounded so weird, too. The one of the students described being told to bend over, basically.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it just sounds like something out of, it's creepy, beyond creepy.
What, not, is it 19? Not, like, yeah, it didn't sound
there's something wrong. I mean, I got sent home from school for something I was wearing when I was in high school. Want to hear what it was?
Yeah.
It was a nose ring. So
bad
Catholic girl. So the interesting thing is that it, of course, didn't change my point of view at all. So what I'm trying to unpack here is, what is the attempt on the school's part to teach?
Because
they're truly trying to, what is it? Because for me, if the attempt was like, listen, that is inappropriate in this space, or we don't want you to look like you're a punk, or whatever it is, it didn't change anything about me.
Gotcha.
It made me mad is what it did, and it made me double down on wanting to do that. In fact, I bought a nose ring that you could take on and off, and I continued to wear it in my life. And I guess just as a thought experiment, I started thinking about this. What if you had no rules at any schools, at any high schools? Do we think that kids are going to start showing up in bikinis? Like, is that what we think? I think people probably have a sense of just like policing themselves.
By that age, they see how the world works. They see that if you go into a grocery store, you probably shouldn't wear a bikini, although Julia Fox did recently, apparently.
Oh, she did, actually. Yeah,
you know, if you go to a funeral, you don't wear a bikini. You know, you figure these things out. It's a great point, Cynthia. Like, putting trust in them to become adults, essentially.
Right. But even, I don't understand, I don't believe the school has uniforms. At least by that, it didn't look like it. I had a uniform at a Catholic high school. And even with the goal of a uniform creating uniformity in the student body and not being competitive with brands, not worrying about, you know, height of shorts and skirts, everybody still found a way to make their uniforms, you know, unique enough to themselves. So it is, isn't it also just the age? Like, but isn't that what they're doing at that age, you know, is experimenting?
I feel like that's what it's supposed to do. You're supposed to learn the rules to learn how to break them. And I will say, I never went to a school with a uniform. I always wanted to. I used to dream about going to a school with a uniform. And the truth is that I grew up with a lot of freedom because my parents were both, you know, immigrant parents working all the time. And so I craved discipline. I wanted so badly, like I wanted to be grounded. I wanted these things so odd, but it's true. And I really wanted to wear the uniform. And I, you know, I think what's interesting about the uniform is although you can do these little things, you can pop your collar, you can, you know, wear
like your kilt really short.
Yeah, your kilt. But yeah. I mean, it's these little things. So you're learning the rules and then you're learning how far. And that is an important lesson to learn in the workplace later, that you can't just have it your way or no way, right? That there has to be a little bit of a middle road.
Well, you're right. What because, do you guys think? Let's get back down to brass tacks with this. Because what do you think about having shorts that are what do they say, knee length? Because Joanne on Facebook says, unpopular opinion alert, requiring skirts to be mid-thigh sounds extremely reasonable to me. It's high school, not Hooters. So, like, well, you know, what do you think about that?
I think, what are we afraid of?
Girls wearing spaghetti strap tank tops with maybe no bras on.
Who was who wrote this?
Joanne on Facebook.
Okay, so I think we need to unpack, like, I don't disagree. There is a lesson to be learned about how when you go into the workforce, you will be told what you can and cannot wear. And that is, but that's their right as a company. Mm-hmm. I think the question is what is the purpose? Like, what are we afraid of? Are we afraid for the girls' safety?
I think that's part of
it. Is that part of it? Because that's never said.
Of the eye, of the gaze, the
male gaze.
But then that's a you problem, not a me problem.
Exactly.
Though. That's a you problem, not a me problem. Then that's, you teach your boys. You don't punish
the
girls.
This is the thing. I think when it comes to dress codes, whether it is, we went golfing this weekend, whether it's a golf course.
Can I tell this story?
You can tell it super fast, sure.
Okay, this story. So
you must.
So we go to this private members-only golf club to get a golf lesson, and they send us a PDF package of etiquette because it is this old school, like, you know, old man, historically old white man's country club. And it's open now, but we go, and it still has all these rules. And, you know, half of it is just dress code. So I send it to Mel twice, and I'm like, Mel, we're going to this place. We need this dress code. And part of it is, you know, a skirt that's, like, midway, and then a collared shirt. And we all showed up in dress code, and Mel showed up kind of in dress code. Her skirt was a little shorter.
Still, little Catholic.
Did they say anything?
She did. Changing it.
Did they say anything?
Well, she showed up in a crop top.
You did not. It was hot. It was like 29 degrees.
There were rules, Mel.
This is what I'm saying. You know, and listen, I did end up buying a shirt that was appropriate. Right. I still look cute, and it was still tight, so it made me feel good inside. But going back to this high school. The fact that they are disproportionately policing the girls' bodies is the thing that has me irked.
Yes.
Because I just feel like there are other countries in the world who do this to an extreme.
Yeah.
And they're not great countries to
I might be guilty of this, of having done this in my past. Quick story. I managed a restaurant and we had a server. She was beautiful. And she didn't shave her armpits. And do you remember those tank tops that scooped down to the waist? Scooped down like this. And she didn't wear a bra.
Oh, wow.
Okay. So I think I had to do something. And I did not know how to handle it. So I just made up a rule. I think this is what we did. Just no more tank tops on the servers, male and female, because we had stuff. But, like, what about that? Like, would you be shocked at all? Maybe not offended, but just like, oh, if someone brought over your thin crust pizza?
Is that not like
no bra,
but
nothing.
Isn't that almost like a health and safety issue? Like, hygienic-wise, you might, you know? Like, you have to wear a hairnet.
Get a boob in your pepperoni?
Yeah. Well, yes. I mean, I think that might be more of honestly, I think that might be more of like a health and safety issue.
I think it's far more complicated than maybe we're
I think
we're
so, too. I think there's a nuance to be had. I just want to go back to Mel, just because you had rules growing up. You had it, and you didn't learn the lesson with the golf anyway. So
you can take the girl out of the club, and you can't take the club out of the girl. I don't care where I am.
I absolutely love this. Okay, well, when is it too early to allow your kids to play outside? That is what we're talking about next. So a woman on Mum's Net says that she allows her toddler to play in the garden at 8:30 a.m., but her partner says that is too early and it will disrupt the neighbors. Who's right here?
What is offensive about a beautiful sound of a child, toddler, playing outdoors at 8:30. Can you think of more annoying noises? We have neighbors that blast easy rock from their front porch. Like, that is almost torturous. Like, that is truly upsetting. But one kid playing around?
What about if you work late nights? Like, this is the dilemma that I remember when I used to work at a bar late at night. I wouldn't get home until like 2 or 3 in the morning. I know. I lived this life at one point in time. I know.
That was you?
But I was miserable. And then if you, like, early in the morning, if I had a neighbor like that, whether it's a dog or a child, that would be a
hard. But is that their problem or your problem?
It is my problem. Right. I hear what you're saying. If we live in a community, I guess you have to invest in like a fan or earplugs or both.
100%. Yeah, 100%. There are, when you ask what could be more offensive, neighbors mowing their lawn.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not going to name names. But neighbors mowing their lawn at 7 or 7:30 on a Saturday or a Sunday morning.
Mm-hmm. What's the time? 10 a.m.?
I mean, at least not before 9.
Not before 9.
At least for mowing. I don't know. For mowing.
Yeah.
So I just think a child or birds chirping, like, that's just called life.
Yeah, I totally
agree.
And if
you live in a community, there are signs of life. And that's a good thing.
Yeah.
If your dog is barking nonstop. Okay, you know, I'm a pet owner and I love that. But if there's a relentless problem, that means you're not walking or exercising your dog enough.
My God.
And then I'm going to have a problem.
Okay, so listen, we have this neighbor. She lives like behind us. And her dog sounds like no dog's bark I've ever heard in my life. I can't even
imitate
it. Maybe
it's a husky.
And I know it's tiny. It's a small dog. And every day since we've moved in, we hear the owner of the dog just go, Coco! Coco, come inside! Come inside, Coco! Coco, come inside! Come inside! Over and over again. And we laugh now. It's become this joy. And then in the winter, when all of the leaves fell off the trees, we could actually see into the backyard. You guys, I cannot believe it. So the owner, when you think of Coco coming inside, don't you think Coco's way across in the backyard? This is the door. Here's the owner. Coco, come inside. Come inside, Coco. Coco, come inside. Coco's right there. All you have to do is bend down and pick up Coco and bring Coco into the house.
On that note, who is this neighbor? Get over the
adorable
kid playing,
the neighbor brings
okay
us so much joy now. Sorry.
Oh, gosh.
Love Coco.
Love Coco. Time for another break. Thank you for that Oscar-winning performance, Giselle. Very, very, very entertaining.
Still to come on The Social Podcast, it's a new era for Downton Abbey. We sit down with the cast of the new film. You're listening to The Social Podcast. Find us on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your favorite shows. And join the conversation online at The Social CTV.
And welcome back to The Social Podcast. I'm Melissa Grello. Jess Allen and Cynthia Lois cannot wait for this next interview. Jess, dive in.
Our next two guests are stars of the global phenomenon Downton Abbey. They have come all the way from across the pond to chat with us about reprising their roles and continuing the legacy of Downton in the highly anticipated film, A New Era. Take a look.
Hello, Mr. Morsley. Why are you here?
You know I love anything to do with films.
Well, I know you enjoy a trip to the pictures.
It's more than that. For me, Hollywood is the ultimate dream factory. And I need dreams as much as the next man.
We are thrilled to welcome here with us today Kevin Doyle and Raquel Cassidy. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Lovely to have you both.
Yes, lovely to be here. Thanks.
I am especially excited. I've been a fan of the series, like countless others, for a very long time. Kevin, can you set up what Downton Abbey, A New Era, is sort of about?
What's it about?
What fans can expect?
Well, without any spoilers.
Yes.
They can expect a wedding.
Hollywood invades Downton Abbey. That's part of the story. Yeah. And another part of the story is the fact that for some reason or other, the Dowager Countess has inherited a villa in the south of France. Mm-hmm. And so part of the family want to get to understand why that has happened.
There's a mystery there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that needs to be.
From the Dowager's past.
Yeah, investigated.
It's luscious, it's gorgeous, it's charming. And I have to say that that's sort of indicative of the entire franchise. It really has captured the hearts of people for so long. Raquel, what do you think it is that's like the magic of Downton that has captivated people's hearts and imaginations?
Well, there are so many ways to answer that, I think, that question.
I think the characters are characters that we've seen grow up, you know. So for the audience members, they've seen Daisy as a young ingenue, they've seen Lady Mary as a spoilt brat, you know, and they see, and all the other characters as well, they see them grow up or grow older, and with that, you know, it's almost like they're their children growing up or their parents getting older. And so I do think because there's such a sense of family both, you know, on each level and between the levels, I think that we live it through them, and it's sumptuous and gorgeous to look at as well. But I do think that, you know, as audience, we can live it through them. And I can say that because I didn't manage to get my way in there until halfway through series four. So yeah. That's how I was experiencing
well,
it anyway.
That's really interesting because you say the audience gets to see you grow and develop as a family. But what's it like for you cast members? This is the second film. Is it like one big family?
Yeah, I mean, it can sound like a cliche, but it really is. Because we've been together for 12 years.
Yeah.
And that's kind of unprecedented in British television, really, for actors to sort of inhabit these characters for so long. And then to share the extraordinary global success that it has.
Yeah.
To sort of experience that together meant that we were kind of thrown together in a way that we weren't really prepared for. You know, when you consider that somebody like Laura Carmichael, who plays Lady Edith, that was her very first job.
Wow.
Incredible.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, imagine that's your introduction to an acting career.
Yeah, fans are particularly invested in the two of your characters and your relationship, Mosley and Miss Baxter. So, Kevin, can you give a bit of a tease as to how your relationship grows in the film?
No. I've described this a lot. This relationship is it's glacial in its progress. And there's a reason for that, you know, because they're two characters who are very careful and sensitive of one another's feelings, and but also it's, you know, it's a time when people had to do things the proper way, and also there was no time downstairs to have a private life, to establish a relationship, and so our relationship has been one of sort of snatched moments, you know, when you're not sort of busy doing other things. And so, but progress is made.
It builds a delicious tension.
Yeah, it really does.
Yeah.
It really
and so, does. You know, if there is a payoff, when there's a payoff, it's all the more joyful, I think.
Yeah.
Kevin, you mentioned that to sort of summarize the movie, it's Hollywood comes to Downton, and it is one of the main plots, and a director wants to see his latest silent film come to life. So it's kind of like a film happening within a film.
Yeah.
But what I really took away the idea is sort of Downton, as we've seen through the series and the movies, Downton had to adapt in order to survive in the same way that films have had to do it. And we, not to give too much away about the movie, but so too did films. So do you think we will see Downton continuing to adapt, I guess, through continual movies? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, but that's the story that Julian has wanted to tell all the time. It's about sort of changing as society changes. And we've seen that since the beginning of the show, really. You've seen the progress of women's roles in society change so much over the 12-year span of the show.
Yeah.
And you've seen people emerge from predetermined lives, you know, especially those downstairs. They were expected to live a certain kind of life, and that was going to be it for the rest of their lives, as their fathers and grandparents and what have you would have had. But they're, as a result of perhaps of the war, the First World War, their ambitions have broadened, and they want to. And so that's something that Julian has wanted to explore. And so certainly, the baton has already been passed on to Lady Mary.
Yeah.
So, and I'm sure that will carry on.
Raquel, we talked about off the top about the gorgeous sort of scenery, and this in the movie, the family makes a plan to go to visit this villa in the south of France. So what was your reaction when you found out that you were going to be shooting on location? Like, what was the experience of shooting there like?
Oh my God, it was so...
Well, I mean, the reaction was, first of all, we didn't know we could go because we were still steeped in COVID, and we weren't sure that France would open up or have us, or that we would be able to cross the border with our own, you know, protocols. So we were planning, well, not ourselves, but this juggernaut behind the scenes was planning two different locations. And it's hard enough to plan a move, a whole unit move to one location, but they were doing two in tandem. We had no idea whether we would, right until the last minute, whether we'd go to Scotland to pretend it was France or to France to be in France, you know. Knowing that I was part of the cast that was going to France, you know, having been released from lockdown was amazing.
Yeah.
And then going, that location is unspeakably beautiful. We don't, I mean, I'm sure they do things to make it look even better, but that's what I saw. You're literally these grounds.
It's so stunning.
You know, down to this private beach, down this incredible sort of set of stairs that just goes on, and it's so sumptuous. It's very beautiful.
It certainly inspires a lot of travel, for sure. Yeah, yeah. Of course, we have to talk about the Crowley matriarch of the family, the Dowager Countess, played by, of course, the amazing Dame Maggie Smith. Mm. She's so funny. Eternally, and the quick one-liners. I mean, I'm just curious, what has it been like working with her over the years? And does she come up with those one-liners herself? Anyone can grab this.
She's a nightmare. Don't believe all the stories about her. She's an absolute nightmare. No, she's gorgeous. She's as funny as she is on screen. You know, and she, I remember the first time I walked into a room and she was there, and it was kind of, you know, your breath stops. It's sort of, and I wasn't expecting that at all, but you know, that's what happens when you're in the presence of greatness sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, without giving too much away, obviously this film really teases a kind of backstory in a lot of us, particularly around her character. Mm. I'm just curious if you can imagine ever there being like a prequel in the future for Downton Abbey.
Well, I hadn't really thought about it, but it would, I mean, there's already so much of it is written, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
And her life was very eventful, it would seem. And, you know, she got into easily as many scrapes as Lady Mary did.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Or does.
Yes.
I'd be here for this.
I would be here for this. Yes.
I don't think anyone wants to see her go, to be honest. So, easily. Mm-hmm. Easily. Depends what Julian wants to write, really.
Yeah. It's in his hands. Very capable hands. Listen, thank you both so much for coming across an ocean to come and sit with us and be with you today. Now, everyone, be sure to see Downton Abbey, A New Era, which is in theaters right now. It's truly, truly enjoyable.
You've been listening to The Social Podcast on the iHeartRadio Canada Network. The conversation continues on The Social. That's weekdays at 1 p.m. on CTV. Join us.
Don't miss a fiery debate. Subscribe to The Social Podcast on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your favorite shows. Until next time, socialites.